Are you looking for new books to read? Do you like finding a new special author? Are you tired of the same old books from the same old authors? Well then, welcome to Discovered Wordsmiths, a podcast where you can hear from fantastic new authors. Join Stephen Schneider as he finds and talks to authors you may not know, but authors that have worked hard to write great new books. Hear about their book and why you should check it out. So sit back and listen to today's Discovered Wordsmith.
Hey, welcome to Discovered Wordsmiths number 82, and it is Christmas week here as I record this, so I'm very excited. I love Christmas time with the family. It's going to be a great week, great holiday. But I'm also very excited about this episode. If you listened to last week with Evan Skolnick, and we talked about video game storytelling, well, Jay Thorne turned me on to this man. His name is Justin Sloan. He does video game storytelling also, but he's also written some books. And he's written some of those with Craig Martell, which some of you may recognize that name. It's kind of funny because we started talking about all the video game stuff when we were chatting the first time and forgot to talk about his books. So he was gracious enough to get back on and talk about all his books with me. So it sounds a little weird because we're talking as if we've already talked, even though this is the first episode. So, here's Justin again for the very first time. But before we do that, I want to play one of my shout-outs. I've got several. This one you may have heard before, and it's a great place to go buy books, a great place for authors to publish books. So have a listen, and then we'll be right back to Justin.
Hi, I'm Rachel.
And I'm Joni.
And we're from Kobo Writing Life, Kobo's free, fast, and easy self-publishing platform. KWL was built by authors for authors, and our team of dedicated book lovers is always working hard to help authors reach new readers around the world.
With Kobo Writing Life, authors can now publish audiobooks and ebooks right in their KWL account. We don't ask for exclusivity, and you'll always control your pricing in up to 16 currencies. You can also create a pre-order for your audiobooks or ebooks with no date limitations.
We have a lot of great opportunities for indie authors, including the option to include your books in our Kobo Plus subscription catalog in selected regions, as well as great promotional opportunities available in the promotions tab right in your KWL dashboard.
If you're a KWL author and you don't yet have access to the promotions tab or the audiobook tab, email us at writinglife@kobo.com and we'll get you sorted. We're all about providing excellent support.
Create your free account today at kobo.com/writinglife. If you want to learn more about Kobo Writing Life, check out our blog, podcast, and find us on socials.
Let's get started. So this is backwards for me. Usually I talk about books and then we discuss other things, but I got so excited talking to you. I talked about all the other stuff and totally forgot about your books. So this is actually part A when I put them out, so it'll be backwards for everybody listening, but that's fine. It keeps life interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, Justin, we already found out a little bit about you and all that. It's coming up in the actually next part of the interview, but I wanted to talk about your books because you have some interesting titles. So tell us about the fiction that you write.
Sure. So I write a lot of different kinds of fiction. And so a lot of it is sci-fi, a lot of it is fantasy. I got my start back in the day when I had been waiting for the next Game of Thrones book to come out, so I wrote my own fantasy, and then it all went crazy from there. I did some middle grade stuff that I finished before that one was really done, and inspired by Harry Potter and whatnot, and then went on to write more supernatural stuff. I wrote with Michael Anderle for a little bit. We did probably, let me just think real quick, maybe like 16 books together, and yeah, that was a lot of fun. Nowadays, I'm writing a lot more of like kind of space fantasy, like Star Wars type stuff.
Okay. So couple questions. First of all, do you find problems with going from fantasy to sci-fi with readers or people like, hey, this isn't like the last couple books? Because I hear that a lot.
Right. Yeah. So what's interesting about Anderle's readership is that his is very much a mixture already. So and a lot of those readers carried over to me, which is great. And so they don't really care. I would say that when you're trying to reach the broader market or when I'm moving away from that focus, then it's like lately, I haven't written a book now with Michael in 2 years at least. So I'd say that I probably have lost like the idea that originally there was a lot of his readers who would check out my stuff. And now it's just the ones who are truly loyal and really interested. And Michael publishes so much, like a book a week or a book a day or who knows, it's a lot, that it's not like his fans have time to go check out other authors anyway, unless it's inside that universe. Reaching out to new audiences, I'd say, yes, it's a lot harder to try to straddle two horses at the same time. But a lot of my newer books have been just sci-fi, or especially the next three that I have ready to go are pure sci-fi. So maybe that'll make it a lot easier. But when you're trying to publish only sci-fi, or sorry, when you're trying to publish a mix, or you're trying to go, yeah, only sci-fi and then fantasy and back and forth, I do find that difficult. And a lot of people will use pen names for that so that you have, because of Amazon algorithms and whatnot, so that you can not get confused, not get the audience confused.
How did you start writing with Michael Angeli? Because he's obviously one of the rock stars in the indie world. 20 books for 50K, everybody seems to know him. So how did you get into writing with him and so many books?
Yeah, so I was in the early stages of 20 books and he was on there and somebody I was talking to mentioned, hey, I think Michael might be open to collaborations. Why don't you reach out to him? And so I did. And so I had written before that. I was writing at Telltale Games at the time. I had just left, I think, and I was writing some werewolf superhero kind of books, not superhero so much as, it wasn't really urban fantasy, but supernatural thriller is a good title for that, for the genre. And I had done a series with my buddy Michael Aron that was we called it Modern Necromancy, and it's the guy, it reads like a video game in this style of action and whatnot, but it's the guy who has to go try to find his lost fiance and ends up dabbling in necromancy and whatnot. And so Michael was publishing these vampire books and werewolves and stuff. And I was like, oh, I'm doing werewolves and I'm doing this kind of stuff. Would you be open to, and I told him about, of course, Telltale and all that and Walking Dead and whatnot that I'd done there. And I said, would you be open to me writing into your universe? And he was like, sure. And at the same time, he was talking to Craig Martell about doing that. So Craig and I were the first ones. Oh, he had done a couple other little spinoffs with other people too. But we were the first ones to really dive into his, Bethany Ann, Carthurian Gambit universe, and really write a lot of books in there versus the ones previously I'd only done like two or three, I think. T.S. Paul and some other guys jumped in around the same time or shortly after. And then since then, it just exploded. But yeah, I dove in because at the time, my books were making okay money, like 1,000 or two a month, nothing crazy. And then he was like, dude, this is going to be great. This is going to be huge. Trust me. And I was like, oh, okay, sure. So he said, just get ready. As soon as book one launches, just be ready to write book two as fast as you can. And sure enough, it went, and then suddenly I went from 1 to 2,000 a month to 10 to 15,000 a month.
Wow,
and
nice.
So, of course, if you see that happen, you're just going to dive in head first, right? There was nothing holding me back at that point. So I just went hardcore. I had left the video game job and taken a side editing job for a little bit. And then I was like, forget this, I'm out. I'm going to write full time. So I left and I started writing full time and just dove in and just kept going. So that's why we ended up getting those 16 books out fairly quickly.
Yeah. That's the 20 books, 50K motto, you know, fast publishing, getting them out, getting as many books out as you can quickly. So you're not doing that as much. And you mentioned the new series, you're getting ready. Tell us about that new series.
Yeah, lately I've definitely calmed down on the writing. So in part because it's tiring, right? The anxiety and all that and trying to throw your own money behind each book you're coming out with, each launch. And you got ads and you got book covers and you got all these things, editors to think about. Relying on all these people's time. And so I've been actually doing a lot of ghostwriting lately because of that. And that's been great. I charge enough to where I know that it's more than I would make on my own and that I won't feel guilty with that time. And I think that's the key. I see some people out there charging $200 to write a half a book or something. And I'm like, you're going to hate yourself. That's time that you could have been spent doing something amazing. But anyway, so I charge you more like $15,000 a book right now, which makes me feel happy because my most recent books were making less than that. They weren't always making less than that, but I don't know, with COVID or something. So anyway, my recent books, what I've been doing is I just write for fun and for passion right now. And I'm working with a buddy and we've published a book or we wrote a book together, a buddy who got me into writing in the first place. That one's a lot of fun. We're just sending it out to beta readers right now. I think we're going to publish mid to late November. And it's about a guy who gets taken up on a safari to a kaiju planet, basically a planet with huge humongous monsters for safari. But then when he gets there, he finds out that he's actually being used as bait to lure out this other group that's up there. And so there's all these fun, you know, back and forth and intricacies and big humongous kaiju style monsters. So that's great. There's no fantasy on that. It's just pure sci-fi, which is fun, like I said. And then we did another one to get more. There's a lot of Netflix shows that are like this. Like, what is it? My brain always blanks on names. Evangelion, whatever, that one. That's the mechs and whatnot.
Oh.
I should pull these up before I talk.
I'm drawing a blank too, but we can look it up.
Yeah, that stuff. So it's like that kind of story with mechs and whatnot. And then we did one with a buddy who lives here where I live, who I met through connections, who works at Disney. He's actually doing some really cool stuff now. He's co-writing and co-directing their next short. So hopefully that'll go big places for him. And we did a fun one. We like to call it RoboCop meets Ninja Turtles. So it's a lot of robots and bounty hunters and kind of craziness, nice. Over the top insanity, but very sci-fi in the sense that it's more on the RoboCop side. It's there's no fireballs coming out of your hands or anything crazy.
That would be cool though.
Yeah. So you could do that if it was a science-based fireball. That's true. Right. And we do have some fun weapons that are used, of course. But yeah, so I've been leaning a lot more into this. I actually got somebody reached out to hire me for ghostwriting a fantasy novel, and I started thinking about it, and the more I did, I just wasn't that into it. For me, especially, like even Game of Thrones, one reason I liked it early on was that, like, for the first 90% of book one, there is no sign of real fantasy. It's all, nobody has magic that you know of, and there's talk about White Walkers and talk about dragons, but you don't know if they're actually real or not. And that's what I loved about those books. And then even when the magic and stuff does start happening, it doesn't feel like it's overwhelming until the White Walkers and stuff start happening later on, then it gets a little more in your face. But that early stuff is what I love. So when I started looking at this concept and there's all the magic and all this stuff, and I'm just like, eh. So I definitely am leaning more into kind of the straight sci-fi, but I'm also going more thriller lately. So I've been outlining a few thriller books. The guy or a girl gets into a situation and it's crazy and you're trying to survive and you have some friends that you meet along the way, some allies. And I just like that. It's just same stuff that I've always enjoyed writing, but I'm taking out the magic and the science fiction and all the insanity and just focusing on characters and what makes characters awesome.
And that, I think, no matter what genre you're writing in, good characters.
Yeah.
People really fall into it.
Yeah. After like 50 books, you get tired of writing another spaceship battle or another way that somebody conjures up a spell or coming up with your magic.
Okay, for this battle, go see book 5 and then book 7. Make those two battles and we're good.
Put those together. You get the idea.
Yeah, that's about what happened. Big ship shoots, another big ship. There's something explodes. People get sucked into space. We're good.
That's another cool thing about George R. R. Martin's books in Game of Thrones, right? Yes, in the TV show, we see some big battles, but a lot of times in the books, they'll just be like, and there was a battle. And then you move on to the next character. And you're like, yeah. You're like, why waste time? Like another sword clashing. He doesn't really waste time on those things. He focuses on the characters. And that's what's literary in his style, I would say.
Right. The first Chronicles of Narnia, Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe, when they made the movie, that end battle was like 15 minutes long. It's literally one page in the book, you know?
Yeah.
It's
just
the battle in the end. So imagine I go to movies to see the explosions and the big stuff. It's a nice balance. How did you get into ghostwriting?
Yeah, so that actually started with this buddy who I was talking about. So the way it first started was he was saying, I was talking about how COVID and whatnot had hurt the income on the book side. And he's like, what if I pay you money and you write my idea? And then, of course, he's reading through it and commenting and doing some little additions here and there. He's like, you write my idea. And then after I make my money back, we'll split the royalties. And so I was like, oh, that's cool. And that's like ghostwriting, but not exactly. Because I'm still having my name on the cover and getting royalties from it. But then I started thinking, well, what if I charge double or triple whatever he's paying me and actually do some real ghostwriting? So I just put it out there. I was like, if nobody hires me, I don't care because I'm still doing my own thing and having my fun. And I have a couple of side jobs popping up and I'm supposed to start something full time maybe in the next week or two. So I'm like, hey, whatever. But I put it out there and I started getting like insane amounts of offers. So I'm like, oh, okay. So why don't I raise the rate a little bit? And then again and again. So I think the key is just keep raising the rate until you feel like you're not getting any more offers. Then you're set.
That's an old musician's thing. Go out there and charge triple scale and people think, hey, he's really good. I want him. And you make it. The people that go out and say, yeah, I'm just going $100. People are like, yeah, he must not be worth it. It's a weird psychology.
And I don't think it's necessarily charging more what you're worth as it is charging what you'd be willing to take for that amount of time. Right? I don't want to just sit down and write somebody else's book per se, but if they're going to pay me this much money, then of course I'll write that book for you. And that's awesome. And if they have the money and they feel like it's worth their investment, I'm always up front. I'm like, hey, are you going to self-publish this or traditionally publish? What's your goal here? If you're going to self-publish this, you're probably not going to make back what you're paying me. I hope you understand that. And they're usually like 9 times out of 10, they're like, okay, I've had one or two people like, really? And then pull out. But I'm like, yeah, if you're an expert marketer and you know what you're doing and you have a lot of money to put behind the ads, then maybe you will. But it's not likely. Like, a lot of self-published authors will be lucky to make $5,000 to $10,000 off of a book, which is sad. A lot of them are making a lot more than that. For people listening who are like, oh, really? That sucks. There's a lot of people making great money off of self-published books, but it's just good to be realistic going into it. Like, if this is your first book, and yes, you've paid somebody who's amazing to write your book for you, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to take off. So keep that in mind.
Very few first books seem to skyrocket. No matter what. I mean, and that's the whole point of the 20 books to 50K. Don't worry about that first book. Wait until you get your 12th book.
And even when it's your 12th book, right? Like, it might be your 13th book that just suddenly takes off. And that's one thing that got tiring for me doing it on my own, where now I just want to do it here and there whenever I feel like it, is you put so many out and some of them hit really big and some of them don't, and you just don't know. So it's like hitting the roulette table, right? What if you put out 10 in a row and they all kind of flop? And that 11th one is the one that goes big, and that's awesome.
And that's what keeps people going back for the gambling.
Yeah,
pull that lever one more time, right?
And some authors have it so well down that they're more marketers, and they can make each of those books make at least a minimum threat, and that's awesome for them. But I've always been more of an author in mindset versus I'm less of a business person. I just want to write my books and have fun. So that's why writing with Michael is so great, because he takes care of all that. And so on this style of ghostwriting too, out of like probably the last 6 jobs that I've taken, only 2 are true ghostwriting. The rest of the other 4 are like, we want to use your name, of course, because it helps their brand or whatever. And if I love the concept and I feel like we stuck to my vision of what I was writing, then of course I'm okay with that.
Yeah. What type of feedback have you gotten from writers or from readers? And this, I don't meant this to sound bad, but did you notice any difference in feedback when you were writing with Michael as opposed to on your own?
I don't know. I do think that I've grown a lot as a writer. So it's been, that was when I first started writing with him, that must have been 2016, so 5 years ago. And I'm always trying to learn and grow and all that stuff, and think I've done a good job at it. So when I look at some reviews from some books that I wrote like right after I started writing on my own with him, some of them are great, but some get very confused. Is this YA? Is this not YA? Like, I have Shadow Core, which kind of is almost YA, but it's not really. It's just, it has a teen protagonist and does deal with some teen stuff, and I don't really swear in that book because I'm not big on swearing usually. But Michael Enderle, if you guys know, his books are full of swearing, and the books I wrote with him were full of swearing. So you might have some people who got confused about that, and that showed through on some reviews too. And I did another book there. I wanted to do 3 protagonists, 3 points of view, which is not quite George R. R. Martin style, but in between the two. Versus my Michael books, I usually stuck to 1 point of view or maybe 2 at most. And so some readers did have that. Oh, I had a hard time with the switching back and forth between the 3 protagonists type thing. But I don't think there's any big, like, substantial craft comments that I've received. I have more recently received good feedback because I'm doing this thing where I'm like basically being a asterisk ghostwriter, like not a real ghostwriter, whatever you want to call that. A writer for a hire who still has freedom to do it my way. But what's cool is I'll do it my way, but then like my buddy who's working with me, he'll go through and comment, hey, let's get a slowdown moment here, or hey, this is awesome, but there's too much action going on. Let's get some description going. And the stuff that probably a good editor would call out for me, but they haven't been as much as they should. But because his name's going to be on the book too, and he wants to make sure he's proud of it, he's doing a really good job of calling out those things that I hope other people would do. And what I should do is hire him to be an editor on all my books, probably. But I have been getting better feedback in that regard because I have a lot more attention to these moments. And it's been a fun thing where I've actually been listening back to my old books too and feeling that action fatigue at moments and realizing, oh man, I must have been just like in a hurry at that point or just like really excited about the action. But I got to remember that a lot of readers are not ADHD as I am. And so they want those moments to slow down occasionally and get the description. Like, even as a reader, I get so bored with that stuff. I'm just like, skip the page. But that doesn't mean I shouldn't take those people into account when I write my books, because I want more people to read it than just me.
And that's interesting because I was doing some beta reading for somebody, and they said, let me know where you stop. Put it down. Let me know where you skip, et cetera. And I said, I don't think I've ever skipped anything in a book. There's only a couple books I get partway through and I'm like, I just really am not enjoying it, and I'll put it down. But I'm not one of those that skips paragraphs and things. I just can't do that.
I got a funny story for you. So I was telling everybody about how my favorite book is Elantris by Brandon Sanderson. And it is a great book. And I kept telling people this. And one day, my buddy, who has heard me tell this over and over again, he looks at me and he's like, Justin, you do remember that you only read 2/3 of that book, right? Because it's a 3 point of view book. And halfway through the first chapter, one of the point of views, I was so bored, I just skipped that point of view for the rest of the novel. And I was like, oh, damn. So I went back and finally read that point of view. And I still love the book. And it's a great point of view once I finally gave it the time of day. But it's what's funny is I didn't need to read that point of view to get the book or to understand the story at all. It just, Brandon Sanderson loves to flesh out his worlds and get more points of view and have a lot of fun stuff going on. And it did add a little bit to that character and the story, of course, the rest of it. But yeah, anyway, so on that point of skipping, I had totally forgotten that I just skipped a whole third of the novel.
Wow. And that's funny too, because we talked about people that start video games and don't finish them. They get 20% through and say, yeah, it's one of the best games ever. I've never finished it.
Games nowadays are like, even when I was young, I guess too, that's like the pride, right? When you're a true gamer, you love a game that takes 100 hours to beat. But now we're old and we have families and we have jobs or writing to do or whatever. And like 100 hours out of my time, that's a lot of money that I just spent and the opportunity cost of what I could have been making from writing. So it's tough. But I love playing these games still. So a lot of times I'll get like Horizon Zero Dawn. I got that and I played for probably 15 hours. And I'm just like, oh my God, this is going to take forever. And I looked at how far I'd gotten and it's like barely anywhere at all. And I'm like... And so then I end up just having to watch the rest of it on YouTube because I want like the cutscenes at least, so I know what happened. Because right. I'm like, there's no way in hell I'm going to be able to have time to finish playing this game.
Right. Yeah.
I feel those people. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm on the other side of that because I don't really have kids and stuff to worry about so much. So I've got more gaming back, but nice. I've actually been spending more of it writing and reading.
Yeah.
And so of course, when I get gaming time, what did I just do? Get the Alan Wake remaster. Which I already played all the way through, and just go do it again and ignore stuff I haven't done.
I will say that when I play games, is probably that and showering are probably the two best moments for when story ideas start hitting my head. Yeah, you just zone out. And you just like you're out there like crunching and just leveling up and gathering some items or whatever, and then all of a sudden you're like an idea for a story.
Yeah, I love that. So where do you get your ideas? And yeah. I'm just like, man, where don't I get ideas? I probably got three ideas driving over here today.
Look at the way these trees intertwines in the branches, and I could tell a story.
Yeah, exactly. That's interesting, though, because that's something I had to learn is, oh, that's a great idea. It's a scene or a character, a setting, and I write it down. And then I go back, I'm like, that's a great idea. And I started realizing, but what's the story? There's a great idea, but you have to have the story to go with it. And so that's something that I didn't do so much at first. I've got a lot of ideas still written down.
Yeah, I think it's great to write those down. I found that sometimes I'll go through and realize that two of them just need to be combined, and then that's the story. Like I'll have this, oh, now it all makes sense.
Yeah, I actually did that with the next set. Sweet. I already started a bit, but yeah, it got mishmashed a little. So who knows? It'll probably never sell because no one will figure out, was this steampunk or is this alternate history or what?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Well, we did that with a lot of the stories that are out there too sometimes. So Shadow Core, the one that I already mentioned, that for me started as a little bit of Apocalypse Now meets Harry Potter. And if anybody reads the book, I'm sure they will not get that at all. There's a slight hint of the Apocalypse Now in that her goal is she has to go out there and hunt down some rogue person who used to be on our side, but is now not really. And she learns about her skills along the way. So that's probably the extent of the Harry Potter-ish. But it started from me writing down, okay, Harry Potter meets Apocalypse Now, and how can I make that awesome in space?
Yeah.
And so it's a fun starting place. Please tell
me you had a bunch of wizards on broomstick, a whole wing flying into a Rite of the Valkyries.
Right. No, there's no wizards. That one is science fantasy, definitely more on the space opera side than the... So it's a little more like Star Wars in that sense. There's definitely less fantasy. Like the main character has some weird alien ability that she can use to do something with atoms that causes explosions if she focuses hard enough, but she's only half alien. I totally spoiled half of the book for you guys if you're going to read it. Sorry. But don't worry. That's only the first book. There's still three after that.
If you had a choice, someone came with an option for your books, would you rather have them turned into movies or TV shows?
Yeah, it depends on the book. Okay. For sure. Yeah. Okay. We're actually pitching some stuff as TV shows and movies right now overseas. And one of the story ideas is very much a TV show idea. It just lends itself so well to the multiple episodes and going on for a long time. And each episode maybe focusing on different people or not necessarily, but coming back and forth like that versus some of them are definitely better as movies. So Shadow Core, I think, would make a great TV series, like more of a Star Wars version of The Expanse type thing versus... I don't know. I guess a lot of them would be good. Like these new ones coming out, like the one I was just talking about with the safari to the kaiju planet, definitely a movie. That's 100% a movie.
big effects and stuff.
Yeah, and it's a story that could be told in an hour and a half versus, like, I could easily see how that could be adapted without losing the heart of it versus Shadowcore. If you tried to make that whole series into a 2-hour movie, you just lose so much.
We have plenty of examples of movies like that.
Yeah, I'm definitely more of a movie guy at heart. So if something got made in a TV show, I'd probably be like, that's amazing. But if it gets made into a movie, and I'm going to put an asterisk next to it, but I'll finish my sentence and say, if it got turned into a movie, I'm going to feel like, success, I'm a victor in life. However, on the other side of that, I feel like so many movies are made that are garbage, that are low quality, that nobody cares about, and they just fade away to, you know, nowhere, versus TV shows. I feel like there's not that many TV shows of this kind of, in this genre. So if it was made into a TV show, that's almost more of a success in some ways, because it's actually a legit thing versus... Yeah. A movie could just be like a movie that gets made and everybody's like, oh my God, that's garbage. And then nobody ever remembers that it was made. Well, so that's a tough question.
I think the landscape has changed too, you know, especially from like when I was a kid. You had big movies and you had crappy TV shows, but you don't have that so much. You have really good TV shows and maybe a good or maybe a crappy movie. So, yeah. Right.
But you're going to say if one of your shows or movies or books, whatever, was turned into either The Wonder Years or The Princess Bride, which one of those would you have under your belt? I'd probably choose The Princess Bride.
But again, like you said, it probably depends on the story and the series.
Yeah, more for my own self of fulfillment. Like in life, if you looked at, put those up on your wall and you're like bragging to people like, oh, I was the creator of The Wonder Years, which I think is an amazing show. Yeah. Or I was the creator of Princess Bride, which is the best movie ever made. I would choose the latter.
So just have you seen the new Wonder Years
show? Yeah.
I haven't watched it yet.
Okay. It doesn't feel like The Wonder Years to me, which is why I said, yeah. It just feels like somebody made a new show and then slapped The Wonder Years on it.
There's definitely a time period. You think of things different when you're younger and older.
Well, there's a lot of good shows that are already what the new one is. To me, it feels like an episode of Black-ish or Mixed-ish or something like this, because that's what it's dealing with, is similar issues. And it's in the same, like Mixed-ish was made the 60s, based on the 60s or 70s, some time period like that, which is the spinoff of Black-ish when the mom was a little teenager in school. And so for me, when I'm watching these two, I'm like, I've already watched this. I've already seen these episodes. And it's a different tone, of course, but it still very much feels like it's already been done.
The Wonder Years was definitely unique at the time. So
yeah, and I think it still could be if they made it again, even with a black family or however they wanted to do it. I think that's a great concept. I was so looking forward to it. But it doesn't focus on that sense of nostalgia, which is what The Wonder Years is all about. You just watch that. You just hear the song and you see the people running on the street and you're like, nostalgia. But the new show comes out and I've only watched episode one. Episode one does not feel like it's about nostalgia. It feels like it's about.
Maybe you got to give shows sometimes a chance to get their footing. Like Orville, that they started off as, let's do the comedy parody of Star Trek. And after episode 3 or 4, it turned into Star Trek in today's world and a totally different feel to the show.
Orville is amazing. Yeah, that show is great. Like, you think it's going to be some stupid comedy, and then it's just, nope, it's full of heart. It's great. It's well done.
Yeah. Bam. The first couple episodes definitely were. They made fun of themselves, and they were goofy and silly, but they definitely altered by episode 4.
And it still is in the context of what it's doing. Like,
yes.
But at the same time, it's not. Like, the guy who has an egg and that whole thing, and it was... It's very silly, but at the same time, it's also very not. It's like it could happen, and it's a fun episode of a show that could have been in Star Trek, in theory.
That's how I tell people that said, oh, I didn't want to see it. It looks stupid. I'm like, but you got to watch it because it's become, if Star Trek never existed and they created Star Trek in 2020, 2019, this is what it would be.
Yeah.
You told us about your plans. And what are some, did I ask you last time what some of your favorite books were? I don't remember. Your favorite books.
I don't recall either, but I already mentioned, of course, Elantris, which at least 2/3 of it is my main favorite book. And then I'm a big Brandon Sanderson fan and George R. R. Martin. And those guys are what got me into writing in the first place. I love the Game of Thrones books. I love some of his earlier stuff too, the vampire one George R. R. Martin did, Fever Dream. And of course, other Mistborn by Brandon Sanderson, that whole series. Trilogy, I think, is amazing. He has a spinoff series of it too that I never got as into for some reason, but I'm sure it's also amazing because he's just a great writer. And he does one called Skyward, I think it is. And he also does the Reckoner series. So Skyward's a sci-fi one with a young girl. Reckoner series is young superheroes. Both amazing. So good. So I would just say anything by those authors is probably going to blow your socks off. And like I mentioned, one of those is sci-fi, but traditionally it was fantasy that got me into all this stuff. I love the Harry Potter books. I had a funny situation where I avoided them for the most of my life, and they came out when I was in the Marines, and I didn't touch them. So that was like 2000 or 2001 is when I first saw one on a shelf in Okinawa where I was stationed, and I, whatever, who cares, kids book. And then I was flash forward to 2007. I was on a beach in Puerto Rico, and somebody had book 7 lying there. And I was like, I'll give it a chance. I have nothing else to do but sit here in the sun and enjoy life. So I opened up book 7 and just plowed through it. I was like, oh my God, I'm in love with this book. And so I started Harry Potter with book 7, and then I went back and read 1 through 7 and then 8. Or was it only 7 books? I forget now.
My 8 movies, 7 books.
Yeah. So no, I started with book 6 then. I started with The Half-Blood Prince.
Okay.
And then I read 1 through 5 and then 6 again and then 7. So yeah. So yeah, I think those are some of my favorite books. Nowadays I'm reading other stuff. Like I'm reading the, Murder on the Orient Express.
Oh, okay.
And I'm loving that. I'm listening to the audiobook and the narrator does an awesome job. I'm reading, I just started reading some, not Indiana Jones. You know what I'm talking about? The James Bond. And I'm very impressed with the writer. Like it's really well done. It's a lot more, tongue in cheek than I anticipated it being based on the newer movies. Of course, they're very serious. Yeah. I guess the older movies feel more like the books feel when you're reading them.
Right. You're reading the Ian Fleming one.
Yeah.
Because there's a continuation by, I think it's okay. John Gardner.
Oh, interesting. No, I only read the old one. I know I always read one of them. I forget which one it is. It had to do the Japan stuff.
Speaking of, one of the movies, I forget, one of the Roger Moore ones, where he's in New Orleans and there's a funeral procession going by and they capture him and throw him in the coffin. Remember that? No. I was in New Orleans this past weekend. I took a picture of that spot. So, Justin, I appreciate you jumping back on. We've been back and forth a couple times. So taking the time, it's much appreciated to find out more about your books, catch up with you again a little bit.
Yeah,
before we go, though, your next set of books or the books you've written, tell everybody listening why they should get those to read.
Yeah, like I was mentioning, they're going to be a lot of fun on the sci-fi side. So if you've been like, damn, I love Justin's writing, but he won't focus on just sci-fi or fantasy, pick one, pick a lane, damn it. I have chosen my lane for these next few books. They're going to be awesome. They're very fun, and they're all standalone, actually. So if you want to get, there's 3 of them that'll be coming up, and they're each standalone in their own universe. There's no like spinoffs and all this stuff. And so I know some of my readers have been confused because I do huge universes with all the books intermingling, like how Marvel does. And I'm taking a break from that. I'm just doing a book. So if you want to get into some fun sci-fi, read the book and be done. Now's your chance. If you don't want that, you can go read all my old stuff.
Great. Got it. Justin, I appreciate you getting back on, and we'll get these episodes up and people can hear all the great conversation we already had about video games.
And awesome. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Justin.
Thank you for listening to Discovered Wordsmiths. Come back next week and listen to another author discuss the road they've traveled, and maybe sometime in the near future, it might be you.